Broadcasting nationwide and coast to coast, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride. Oh, yeah.
From the Liberty University Broadcast Studio, it's Todd Starnes.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. Hope you are doing great wherever you might be. I can tell you here at Southern Command in Memphis, Tennessee, if you're going to go outside to breathe, you need a spoon. It is, the humidity is that thick here in the Deep South. Rainy all over the place, but that's summertime for you. Folks, let me give you the telephone number if you want to call into the show, 844-747-8868. That is a toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. Our website, by the way, toddstarnes.com. All sorts of incredibly great stories for you to check out. Also, a brand new podcast coming from call screener Avery. So if you're a big fan of all things dealing with nerds, you will enjoy this podcast. What is it called again? It's the Informative.
It's called the Informative Nerd Burrito Podcast.
Nerd Burrito. Thank you very much. I keep forgetting the word informative.
Yeah.
Remember the nerd and the burrito.
Yeah.
And podcast, but it's the informative part.
Yes, sir.
I want to say intellectual.
No, we're not there yet. We're not. We're almost there.
But you're working. It's a goal.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. All right. Well, thank you, call screener Avery, for that.
Of course.
A couple of crazy stories. You know, the president is catching a lot of fire because he shared a video out of Flint, Michigan, the local mall there in Flint Township. There were two black guys. One of them is a rap artist, and they filmed. They were brothers, and he filmed his brother as he beat the living daylights out of a Macy's employee. And the poor guy, the Macy's worker, has the face mask on, and he's begging for his life, asking the guy, "Please don't hit me. It's a terrible scene." Now Macy's has investigated this, and the police are involved now. And by the way, we have the video up on our website, toddstarnes.com, and you can see it for yourself. It is clearly a case of black on white crime. And this is a big problem in America. As a matter of fact, the data, the actual statistics back up that statement. This is a big problem in America. But it's a politically incorrect issue. And the mainstream media refuses to cover these kinds of stories. Almost as if there is something wrong, or as if this Macy's worker deserved the beating that he received. Now the guys involved who have not been arrested yet, they say, you know what, they say the Macy's worker used a racial epithet. Macy says that's not the case. They said this was an unprovoked attack, and they're standing by their employee, and now the police are involved. And hopefully, we're going to get to the bottom of it. And I just, as an aside here, and again, this is a little politically incorrect to say, but if the guy did use the N-word, he gets whatever he gets what he deserves, and he got what he deserved. That kind of language is unacceptable. But Macy says the guy didn't say anything about it. So there you go. ToddStarnes.com, if you want to watch that video, the president weighed in, and he's getting the what for over at CNN. They're accusing the president of stoking the flames of racism. That's pretty laughable coming from CNN, which not only started the race fire in America, they poured gasoline on it. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later on. 844-747-8868. Want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. A good friend of this program, and you know, I didn't know this about KT McFarland, but she actually started working in Washington during the Nixon administration as a 10-year-old, apparently, KT McFarland. Is this true?
I was 18, but thanks for the compliment. I started out as the night shift typist, working for Henry Kissinger while I was a freshman in college. And
what a great gig that must have been.
It was. And you know, the amazing thing, and life does have a way of coming full circle, I started out on the National Security Council in the West Wing of the White House when I was 18. It was my first job. And then my last job was at the same office, just a few feet away from my original desk, and I was the deputy national security advisor. So life has some ironies in it.
It certainly does. You know, I have to brag on Sebastian Gorka. I bought a radio station back in Memphis, KT, News Talk Station, and Sebastian Gorka said, "Todd, you have to put me on." And I'm like, well, yes, we have to, with that great voice Sebastian Gorka has. So we carry his show after mine, and I had to scoot out. I was running some errands, heading down to the farmer's market to get some tomatoes, and that's another day for another story there. But anyway, I'm listening. You were a guest, and you know how Gorka is. He has these elaborate introductions, and he called you the queen. He wanted to call you a princess, but you said you'd rather be the queen.
Yeah. None of this princess stuff. Empress would have worked too, but queen would have been all right.
Indeed. Well, we love Sebastian Gorka here on this. Yeah, he does a great job with the introductions, is what I was trying to get around to say. All right, KT, great story, great column up on FoxNews.com about John Bolton. And I have to tell you, you know, I worked at Fox News 15 years. I had several interactions with him. He seemed like a straight-up guy, a good and decent guy. You got to see a different side of John Bolton, and you write about this moment when you knew things were not going to go well.
Yeah, it was on Election Day, and so John Bolton, Fox News contributor, I was a Fox News contributor, and we were both in the green room at Fox, and I said, "Did you vote? Have you voted yet?" And he said, "Yeah, I voted for Trump. He's an idiot." John tells me he's an idiot, but he's better than Hillary Clinton. So that's why I was so surprised when a year later, John Bolton lobbied so hard to be appointed national security advisor by President Trump, and he took the job. So I thought, oh, this is not going to end well. You don't really want to go into a job like that with the impression that your boss is an idiot and that you think you know better than your boss. And sure enough, they really clashed right from the beginning, Todd, not only on temperament, but particularly on national security policy. You know, Donald Trump was elected by people who said, we don't want any more endless, hopeless foreign wars. And Donald Trump's idea of foreign policy is fix the American economy and then use our economic and trade leverage to negotiate good deals for America. And John Bolton was the original neoconservative, the guy who was one of the architects of the Iraq War. That President Trump was so critical of. And John Bolton, his attitude was always send in the troops, bomb them. He wanted to bomb Iran. We were both on a show together on Fox News where he suggested that the United States should bomb Iran. He wanted to bomb North Korea. He wanted to send troops in to Venezuela. He wanted to increase the American commitment in the Middle East, with whether it was Afghanistan or Syria/Iraq. So, you know, this is a guy who really was very much at odds on the policy. And the other thing is he's really hard to get along with. I'm delighted to hear that you got along well with him, but most of my National Security Council colleagues and friends who are still in the Trump administration said he was really so condescending, including to President Trump, that he really managed to isolate himself. People didn't really want to work with him. Cabinet officers went around him directly to the president. And he spent, when it was clear that he was going to, on borrowed time, that he was going to be fired, He didn't interact with his National Security Council staff. He sat in his office behind closed doors, and we now know what he was doing. He was taking his copious notes, big note, he's always a big note taker, and turning it into a book manuscript that he would then release and make a fortune on selling it to the American people.
You know, it was fascinating to read some of the excerpts from Sarah Sanders' book, which is soon to be coming out. And she wrote about some interactions with Bolton. And to your point, he was certainly not a team player.
No, and, you know, and then the other thing I think is quite unfair is he talks about meetings that he had with President Trump in the Oval Office. But if you look at the headlines are incendiary. I mean, they sound like, oh, President Trump's a terrible guy. But if you actually read through what John's saying, it wasn't about what President Trump did. It was about what President Trump thought about or said out loud or vented about or both brainstormed about. It wasn't, if you look at what President Trump does, and that's the important thing, lesson I've taken from working with President Trump, is don't listen to what he says. He says a lot of stuff, but look at what he does. And his policies have been extremely good and extremely successful. And when John Bolton, his main criticism, I guess, is that President Trump didn't take his advice. Well, thank goodness, you know, we're not in about five different wars. But I found that it was very disingenuous when he, who must have understood that President Trump's style is really different He doesn't sit back and wait for you to brief him on what you think is best. He takes a briefing, and he immediately takes charge. He wants it to be a free-for-all. He wants everybody to weigh in on their position. And Don Bolton was taking what should have been private conversations. He was kind of twisting them around, selectively editing them, and making it sound like President Trump was crazy, when in fact, President Trump uses these meetings as brainstorming sessions where everybody gets to weigh in, and outside of the box, weigh in is even better.
Honestly, KT, I think that was the best part of the column you wrote, and you did such a great job explaining this to the, you know, to the average person out there, that there's this line: Donald Trump is no professional politician. He revels in his political incorrectness. And I think that's what makes Donald Trump Donald Trump.
Absolutely. You know, Donald Trump, he's not a traditional Republican, he's not a traditional Democrat. And he looked at American foreign policy and economic policy over the last 20 years and said, this is all wrong. You know, we should be a thriving economy. We're not a thriving economy. We should be energy independent from the Middle East. We're not. We should stand up to China, which has been taking advantage of the United States for decades, but we never did. We should have gotten the Europeans to contribute more to our common defense, but we never did. So President Trump took the foreign policy and the economic policy of the last 20 years, which somebody like John Bolton is an architect of, and he said, no, we're going to do things differently. And that's why the American people elected him. You know, typical, you know, same old was not working for the American people, and that's why they needed Donald Trump, and they needed somebody. You know, if a typical traditional politician where all the edges are smoothed off, that's somebody who isn't going to really make fundamental and structural changes. You need a bull in that china shop if you want to have some real change. And I think that's why the American people, who have a lot of common sense, they looked at a guy like John Bolton and the other candidates and said, well, they're not getting the job done. I'm going to take a chance on the guy who's really different, and that was President Trump.
KT, you've worked in a lot of Republican administrations, again, dating back to the Nixon years. There are a lot of Republicans, modern day Republicans, that do not like Donald Trump. They say they're not going to vote for Donald Trump. What has he done, in your estimation, for the Republican Party that needed to be done?
The Republican Party had sort of gone along for decades. And I'll address foreign policy, because that's really where I'm the expert. And the United States had agreed to go into a lot of agreements with the Europeans and the Asians after World War II, which made sense at the time. We subsidized their economic development at our expense, and we underwrote their security at our expense, because we wanted the countries of Europe and Japan and Korea to become trading partners with us and allies and people we wouldn't go to war with. And that worked extremely well for 70 years. But Donald Trump came along and he said, well, wait a minute, why are we still doing this? We were never meant to subsidize them forever. And when the Chinese took advantage of the situation, the argument with China was, well, let's do for China what we did for Germany and Japan and Korea. Well, underwrite their economic development, and then they'll be really good allies and trading partners. But the Chinese didn't. They exploited the situation. And so I think for the Republican leaders, Democrats as well, but for the traditional Republican establishment, they failed to acknowledge that the situation had changed. Mm. The times had changed. The United States was no longer the wealthiest, most powerful country in the world, times 10 over everybody else. That the Chinese really want to replace the United States as the dominant world power. And President Trump realized what the Chinese were doing, and he realized that America could no longer continue to underwrite other countries in the world, and the other countries didn't need it. It was time to put American interests first, which
KT,
is quite revolutionary.
KT, we're going to have to leave it there. It's a terrific column you wrote, Trump and Bolton. This is when I knew it wasn't going to end well. Folks, you can read KT's great work at foxnews.com. KT, thank you.
Thank you very much, Todd.
All right. Great lady right there, folks. Great American patriot, too. We do have to take a break. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
right, so here's the headline out of Columbus, Ohio. Thousands of people have signed a petition to rename Columbus, Ohio. They apparently got triggered by Christopher Columbus. The mayor, Andrew Ginther, announced earlier this week the statue of Christopher Columbus outside City Hall is going to be removed and placed in storage. The mayor says, for many people in our community, the statue represents patriarchy, oppression, divisiveness. That does not represent our great city. And we will no longer live in the shadow of our ugly past, Mamma Mia. So there you have it, the mayor of Columbus, Ohio. A little trivia question for you, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't given away a lot of stuff lately. So we're going to give away a copy of Culture Jihad. What do they want to rename the city? By and large, people want to rename the city in honor of a favored son. And if you know who that favored son is, give us a call, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. All right, in the meantime, back to the phones. Let's go to the beautiful state of North Carolina. Russell is listening to us on The Talk Station. Hi, Russell. What's on your mind today?
Well, how you doing today, Mr. Starnes?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
I wanted to call in because I've been hearing a lot about, I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky, or Louisville, Kentucky, however you want to say it, that the governor there is going to give just black people 100% health coverage for free. And my question is that or is that not a type of segregation?
Well, it's certainly discrimination, and you are correct. And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Andy Beshear is the governor there. He's a Democrat, and he is promising health coverage for every single resident of the Commonwealth of Kentucky who is black. If you are white, good luck, you're on your own. But the question is this legal? Because there is going to be some blowback. But according to Politico, it's not clear if he can actually deliver on that campaign promise.
Well, I certainly hope not. You know, like I said, I'm from there. My parents live there. And, you know, My whole thing was, it seems like a little bit of segregation that if it was, and forgive me for saying this, I'm trying not to be racist. I'm not racist or anything like that.
Well, we don't use racist language on this show now, Russell. So, we just don't allow that.
Okay. Well, I'll try to word it the best I can. If segregation was towards black people, then it's not okay.
But well, I think it's wrong. And Russell, let me jump in here, Russell, because we're coming up on the break here. And I get where you're coming from, Russell. I get it. You know what I believe? All men are created equal. White, black, if you're going to give health insurance to black folks, give it to white folks. You know, Obama did the same thing. He offered jobs to minorities, but not to white people. What about the poor whites? I mean, come on, folks. Get right back to the phones. We had a trivia question right before the break. Big story out of Columbus, Ohio. Thousands of people signing a petition. They want to rename the state. They say it's racist, or they want to rename the city, the capital city. They say it's racist. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Mary is joining us, listening to us on our Facebook live stream. Mary, how are you doing today?
I am doing great.
Wonderful. Now, Mary, we had a trivia question, and before we get to the trivia question, I want to get your reaction, though, to this news. They want to rename Columbus, Ohio.
It's absurd. I mean, it's just so crazy what's going on throughout the whole country, And I mean, like, I'm in Columbus and I've lived here my whole life, and you're afraid to even go out. You can't go downtown, that's for sure. And I just don't understand it, Todd. Every day I wake up and something else baffles me. Like, why are they doing this? And I believe our mayor is just, I don't know a nice word to say about him, other than he's
a moron.
Weak.
Oh, huh? Yes, weak. Weak is good. Weak. Yes, weak is appropriate. It's not a moron.
Yeah. I could come up with some other ones, but, we'll, you know, it's a live TV, and I don't want to be unladylike. So,
and you're very kind, because we have lovely ladies who listen to this program. So Mary, I appreciate that. You know, it's interesting, Mary. Yesterday, we were talking about this story in Columbus where a lot of motorists are getting caught up in these protests.
Right.
And one of the guys called 911, and the dispatcher said, "Sorry, pal, you're on your own. The mayor told us not to get involved."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, you'll have to just kind of watch when there's a live feed. And I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be Columbus, but what, you know, I'll be 64. And I just can't imagine talking to anyone, let alone someone in authority, to the way they do on, I think it was Saturday or Sunday. I mean, these folks that are coming in, I don't believe a lot of them are citizens of Columbus, but like there was one lady that had a megaphone, you know, they're allowed, that's what they're there for, and she was right in the police officer's face, screaming whatever nonsense she had, and I thought, well, I know they have banned, like, chemical drugs and chemical things to spray on him, but what about socks? Stuffing her mouth with a sock. I mean, it was just so agitating to me, and I feel bad for the police officers.
Oh, it's terrible. And
it's,
you know, we
awful.
We support law enforcement on this program, and
we do too, and it just seems to get scarier and scarier every day. And it's like, you know, my husband and I talk, it's like, what are we going to do? Well, I don't know if I can say it, but, you know, we do have protection. And, you know, he was never an advocate of any kind of weapons.
Mary, I know you must be listening to the show for a long time now. We are a pro-Second Amendment radio show, so certainly, of course you can say that you have guns.
Okay.
Or cannons, you know, or just bazookas.
Well,
or,
you know, you fear of the fact that, you know, somebody could, you know, come back on you and what have you, but nobody with any sense is listening. I mean, no one, the people that aren't listening aren't going to listen to your show. You know what I'm trying to say.
We getcha.
Yeah. You know, just, they will never know I'm saying anything because they don't listen to sensical things.
They're the NPR crowd. That's what you're trying to say. They're the NPR crowd. National Public Welfare Radio. I got
yes.
you. Hey, Mary, you know what? Let's try to win you a prize here because you know, they want to rename the city for one of your favorite sons, who, by the way, I didn't realize this guy was actually from Columbus, Ohio.
I didn't either.
Who do you?
Like I said, I have been here my whole life and never heard of him. He must have left pretty early because.
So who are we talking about, Mary?
Guy Farrar with Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
I love that show. It's a great show.
Yeah, I do
show.
Too. Mm. So, yeah.
You know, Mary.
And it's like, Todd, I'm getting older. How will I ever get used to calling it anything other than Columbus?
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. So, Mary, you know what? You said you didn't understand why things were happening, and we're going to solve that question for you. We're going to hook you up with a free copy of my latest book, Culture Jihad. And okay. it's a fun read, but it's an important read. And there's a lot of heavy hitting stuff in here. But you're going to understand why the left is doing this and, okay. and what's really going on. So I don't want you to go anywhere.
Another thing, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You said you got Mike Lindell's pillows. Everything he has is wonderful. So the
Isn't
sheets,
it great?
The pillow topper.
Oh,
so keep
great.
Ordering.
Oh, that's right. And we want to encourage you to keep ordering as well. Promo code STARNS. It helps keep the lights on here at the Todd STARNS Radio
okay.
Show.
Okay. All right.
Mary,
hey,
you're a
so
sweetheart.
It was a pleasure.
All right. We're going to put you on hold. Avery's going to get all your information. I told you I wanted to read something from Culture Jihad, and I do. When I was a kid growing up, I don't know if you guys remember Dr. Dobson, James Dobson. And my parents raised us as, you know, under the teachings of Dr. Dobson. And, you know, including the part about corporal punishment. I was not a big fan of that part of Dr. Dobson's ministry, but it is what it is. And it paid off. I think it paid off. But Dr. Dobson has become a friend of this program. And he allowed me, gave me permission to reprint a letter he wrote from 2018. And it says a lot about where we are right now as a country. And I want to read this to you. Because many of you were raised under those precepts and those teachings, but a good many were not. And that's a problem. In 2018, James Dobson penned a letter to the nation. He wanted his fellow countrymen to know that socialism was creeping into our political discourse. And so we discussed the dispatch at length on my radio program. He says, you can't have a socialistic country and have a respect for the Constitution and the rule of law because we're given rights in there that socialistic leaders will undermine. Dr. Dobson said, if you take out the Constitution, there's not a whole lot left. That takes my breath away. That there are people out there that are really serious about making this a socialistic country. His concerns were providential. As we entered the early days of the 2020 presidential contest, a number of the Democratic candidates are pledging allegiance to a socialist agenda, and Senator Bernie Sanders became the early front runner. In light of the looming election, Dr. Dobson was kind enough to allow me to reprint the letter he published back in 2018. And folks, I'm going to read this to you, this letter from Dr. James Dobson, and it should send chills down your spine. Dear friends, I'd like to tell you about an experience Shirley and I had while visiting the cultural centers of Europe about 20 years ago. One of the cities we toured was Berlin, Germany. I've been fascinated since I was a child with World War II and what made the adults around me so fearful. I have wondered in the ensuing years how highly educated and intelligent Germans could have been so corrupted and deceived by the propaganda that lay the foundation for tyranny. It is still difficult to comprehend how so many Christian churches, with their good people, fell prey to the lies screamed by Adolf Hitler and his evil cohorts. Even before he revealed his murderous intentions, they stood with their arms and hands extended, cheering rabidly for a man who was to become one of the most ruthless dictators in world history. I searched for an understanding of the processes that led to torchlight parades, book burnings, racial hatred, mass killing of Jews, gypsies, Poles, homosexuals, and pitifully disabled and mentally ill people. Does this sound familiar, folks? While most Germans did not know about the extermination camps, the majority favored his preparations for war. Many books have been written on that subject, but I needed to see it for myself. I found an explanation on the streets of Berlin. One morning, I paid a small fee to be included in a walkabout tour of the important buildings and sites from the Nazi era. An articulate professor led our group and recounted what happened before and during the war. First, we stood outside Hermann Göring's headquarters. He was the second in command after Hitler. Then we walked past Goebbels' propaganda ministry, for which he spread lies and fake news during the 1930s and 40s. Our group then stepped outside Gestapo headquarters, where so many people were tortured and murdered for daring to oppose the regime. Demons seemed to leer from the windows and rooftops. The tour ended at the parking lot that now sits over the bunkers where Hitler spent his last days and eventually committed suicide with his wife. Most of the city was demolished by the Allied bombings, but these historic locations remain intact because they were reinforced by steel and concrete. The tour lasted 2 hours, during which I learned how the Nazis managed to enslave the German people and then molded them into a force that devastated and conquered almost every country in Europe. What the professor told us remains in my memory today. He said the Nazis' success was made possible by one primary factor. Are you ready for this, ladies and gentlemen? It was their complete and utter control of the means of communication. There was no internet or television at the time, of course, but what did exist reached every dimension of the nation. Radio was highly effective in those days, as were newspapers, films, speeches, books, magazines, posters, rallies, and yes, public schools and universities. Every word spoken in Germany was scrutinized, and those who rejected Nazi lies publicly were often murdered or sent to concentration camps from which most did not return. I want to stop here, folks. Remember what the supporters of Bernie Sanders said just a few months ago. They wanted to take all of the people who supported Donald Trump, all of the people in the Trump administration, and what did they want to do? They wanted to put them in concentration camps, re-education camps. Terror was the stock and trade of the Gestapo. It was a common occurrence for secret police to knock on the doors of anyone who did not conform to the party line. An offender would be dragged outside and shot, leaving terrifying images and warnings for the neighbors to see. It told them what would happen if they also got out of line. Now, let me stop here for a moment. We're not being shot in the streets. But look at what's happening to people who are conservative, people who believe that all lives matter. They're being dragged out into the streets of public opinion. Their lives are literally being destroyed. Even children were urged to report the activities and private conversations of their parents who talked at home about their opposition to the gangsters in government. Does this sound familiar, folks? They were tortured or murdered, too. What a ghastly period in human history. Speaking of children, one of the most wretched elements of the dictatorship was the complete domination of public schools. Parents had no influence on how their boys and girls were educated. In fact, all schools became training centers for Nazi propaganda. The boys were prepared for war, and the girls in their mid-teens were actually sent to camps where they were expected to get pregnant from sexual contact with nearby boys. Babies born out of wedlock from these encounters became wards of the state to replace men likely to be killed in battle. And I want you to listen to this last segment here of this letter that is in my book, Culture Jihad, a letter written by Dr. James Dobson. Here's how Adolf Hitler viewed public schools. He said, "Your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on your descendants. Your descendants, however, now stand in the new camp. In a short time, they will know nothing but this new community. This new Reich will give its youth to no one." And look what's happened in our country, ladies and gentlemen. Look at what the left has done. Look at what Barack Hussein Obama has done to our nation. They have taken a generation of American young people and they have trained them, indoctrinated them, brainwashed them to think that America is evil, that America is the problem. And now you see on the streets of our cities, this is why I'm so passionate about Culture Jihad, because I saw this coming. Dr. Dobson saw this coming. We've got to do something about it, folks. We've got to. And I've got to take a break right now, or they're going to yell at me. So 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. You can get yourself a copy of this book on the website, toddstarns.com. We'll be right back.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
You know, the great one, Mark Levin, he likes to read from his books every now and again. And I haven't, you know, I think I've done this maybe twice since we've been on the radio together. But it's just a reminder from James Dobson. Even he saw where all of this was going to. And we have to, we've got to take a stand, and we've got to be able to fight for our country. We're going to have to do that. So look, every now and again, I get messages from you fine folks, and we have a very talented, very gifted audience. And I got an email last night from Lynn Delgado, and she and her family live in Little Rock, Arkansas. They listen to us on KARM, and they are all musicians, very talented musicians. And Lynn sent me a song. We're going to try to put this up on the live show blog. But I thought, you know, we'd wrap up this hour of the show by playing this really awesome new country music song written by Anthony Delgado, Dominic Delgado, and Lynn Delgado. And their son, Dominic, is the guy on vocals. Again, very talented group. They wrote this song 3 years ago, but it really does speak a lot to what's honestly happening in the country right now. So, Lynn, thank you so much for sending this along. And we'll post a link to it in the live show blog. But let's take a listen to the Delgado family from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Don't get me wrong, and these new age country songs, but some days I still long for Waylon and Willie. And a time when I was young, Daddy taught me about guns and hard work, but for fun, that's the country way. I'm not asking for much, let's go back to the old days. Country music, where'd you go? Trucks and girls all over the radio. And that's all right with me. But where's my country, land of the free? Run to God is where I'm supposed to be. Where has my country gone? Drugs. Policemen ain't allowed to be tough. Our children don't know a lot of stuff about life. They can't even play outside without fearing for their lives. And ain't it time that we realize that that ain't right?